Welcome to Federal Insights for January, Digital Transformation Month, sponsored by NEC Corporation.
Already advanced technologically, the intelligence community is nevertheless undergoing something of a digital transformation. Practitioners there want to make sure it stays in the forefront with application of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and biometrics. For an update, I spoke with the Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, John Beeler.
The job of the Director of Science and Technology here at ODNI is to ensure that the IC-S&T enterprise is strategically aligned to our desired outcomes. And so when I say the IC-S&T enterprise, this means both the agencies that people think of, so the Director of Science and Technology at CIA and research over at NSA, but also the other aspects of the intelligence community, right? We're a big tent organization. So this includes intelligence functions at places like the Department of Energy or the Department of State. So my job is to make sure that as we're investing in science and technology capabilities to enable the mission of the IC, that the next marginal dollar that we spend is aligned properly against our strategic outcomes.
And so it sounds like you are aligned both with the mission requirements of the different components, including those even outside of the official IC. But is that also true of the technology enablement pieces that might cross-cut several agencies, you know, the infrastructure?
Yes, very much so. So a large part of our job here at DNI, since we're not a kind of tactical mission-focused agency, is to make sure that we're kind of scanning the horizon and identifying these things that, as you say, do cut across multiple agencies, because each individual agency is very expert and skilled at executing their mission. So our job is to make sure that there aren't gaps and seams that develop as those various agencies do a wonderful job executing their own mission, and make sure that as an intelligence community, we're kind of marching in step towards our strategic goals. So this ends up applying to lots of technological areas like artificial intelligence and machine learning, but also tons of other areas to say, hey, Agency X is doing a great job at their particular mission outcome, but what as a community do we need to consider that the specific agency might not think about when executing their own mission?
Because I imagine that, say, at the NSA or the CIA or any one of those places, they probably have lots of really smart, techie people buried deep inside that correspond to the channels that you're concerned with at kind of a central level.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, our biggest asset in the intelligence community is probably our talent and the people that work in the community and come to work every day to hammer at these hard problems. So our job here is to make sure that those folks have the things that they need to get after their mission. And again, just really emphasizing this kind of horizon scanning activity that we do to make sure that as a community, we're appropriately lashed together and walking together towards the same outcomes.
And you mentioned artificial intelligence and machine learning as some of the specific areas that everybody, I guess the whole world, is looking at those things. And you mentioned a ton of others. What are some of the others, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, so right now we consider 19 technology domains. So this covers everything. It includes artificial intelligence and machine learning, but also covers the biological sciences, chemistry, quantum generally, right, writ large, both quantum information science as well as quantum sensing, as well as things like precision navigation and timing, high-performance computing. So basically, you name it, we touch it at some point.
And does biometrics come into all this, too? Is that part of the biosciences or an application of it?
Yeah, so, you know, the biometrics conversation is part of this kind of larger push to how we consider our data and how we posture ourselves to do the fundamental mission of the intelligence community, which is collect and analyze information to provide insights to policymakers within an actionable time frame. So that all gets kind of wrapped up in this. How do we make use of the data that we have to do our job, you know, better, faster, and more accurately?
All right, let's zoom back out here for a second and talk about digital transformation. This is a term that's on everybody's lips across the government these past couple of years. What does digital transformation mean in the ODNI context and in the science and technology context?
Yeah, so really think about this in terms of, again, how we enable the community. So for us, digital transformation, we have this initiative called the AIM Initiative, Augmenting Intelligence Using Machines, that's really focused on how we deploy what we call AAA technologies, so augmentation, artificial intelligence, artificial intelligence and automation technologies. So I'll note that artificial intelligence and machine learning is only one aspect of that those AAA technologies, because the point here is that everyone gets, you know, it's 2020, as you said, everyone gets very focused on machine learning, but there's a whole host of solutions that aren't kind of cutting edge machine learning research or deep neural networks or things like that. So I always joke that a lot of times, you know, we have analysts working with a set of spreadsheets, and they don't really need a deep neural network. They need a Python script or something like that, or just some simple automation techniques. So for us, digital transformation is figuring out how we apply some of these technologies and techniques to the large amount of information that we have to, again, be able to surface information to our analysts so they can come to the conclusions that policymakers need to really inform decision making.
And that AIM initiative, just tell us a little bit more about how that works.
So this is, the AIM initiative really falls under this broader umbrella of what I mentioned earlier, which is how do we ensure that the investments that we're making and the activities that we're pursuing as a community really hang together. So for a lot of these things, like deploying machine learning, even though I just spent a lot of time saying that, you know, machine learning isn't the end-all be-all, it's the example that we tend to lean on, you know, make sure that each agency has the various technologies in place to deploy some of these things, and make sure that if one agency makes a large investment in a particular machine learning capability, that capability is shareable across the community. So again, the common theme here is really ensuring that the agencies and the folks that are out doing this work have the sorts of things that they need to enable their job, as well as ensuring that once an investment is made, it's kind of spreadable across the community.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme, is to avoid the duplication of effort, even when there is an urgency toward getting to the latest and greatest that is needed for the mission. But there's no point in everybody inventing the same wheel in parallel, in other words.
Right. And, you know, duplication of effort isn't necessarily an evil in and of itself. Again, we have a wide swath of agencies that cover a wide set of mission. So just because one agency is investing in something like computer vision doesn't mean that another agency doesn't also need to invest in computer vision, because computer vision is a very, very big umbrella of things. So we're fine with smart duplication of effort when it's for a reason, or for a lot of these technologies that are very nascent, we might not know what the best approach is. So we might want to invest in two or three different avenues to pursue that same outcome, because we don't know which one will be the best yet. So really want to emphasize that, you know, we're not saying there can be no duplication or no similarities within efforts, but we want to make sure that everything that we do is done smartly and with eyes wide open and with a reason for doing that, and not just kind of making ad hoc decisions.
John Beeler is Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer for men. African-American men are more at risk. That's primarily because it's often diagnosed when it's more advanced. The good news is that diagnosed early, most prostate cancer can be treated effectively. If you're a man over 50 or have a family history of prostate cancer, talk to your doctor today about a test. For more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Welcome back to our interview with John Beeler, the Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Our topic is digital transformation. And just out of curiosity, again, the pandemic has affected the way so many organizations in the government approach their work, and in some cases even have to approach their mission. What's been the case for the ODNI, and how has that affected some of the work you might have been doing to promulgate this technology across the IC?
Yeah, the pandemic obviously introduces a lot of hardship, both in terms of our mission as well as in terms of the folks that we have working for us. But it has provided some opportunities where historically the intelligence community obviously has been very focused on working in classified spaces and with classified information. I come from a research background before I headed into government service. And there's a ton of research that happens out in the open, right, in academia and in industry. So I think what the pandemic has enabled us to look at is what work really needs to happen in our kind of more controlled, secure spaces, and what can we do with our employees out in an unclassified environment, right? So a lot of the research and development, a lot of engaging with academia and industry can happen elsewhere other than our secure spaces. So that's one thing that has been a little bit of a silver lining of the pandemic and the hardships imposed by it that I am very much will persist whenever life returns back to normal, is this idea that there's a wide world out there and we need to make sure that we're engaging in it, especially on the science and technology side, where more and more is happening, not just in the open, but, you know, free and open source software. The advances in machine learning often happen on places like Twitter, right? So just being able to engage in some of those conversations and track what's happening is very useful to us.
And in my imagination, I'm thinking of the human intelligence efforts that happen in across the IC, maybe around the world even. And that involves a person-to-person type of interaction and whatever else technology might be hidden underneath there. But the idea of people being close together, infiltrating, getting to know people, getting people's trust, that all must be affected by the pandemic. And I wonder if there are any technological approaches that you've at least started to think about, if not apply, that could aid the human intelligence gathering effort when human interactions themselves have changed so fundamentally?
So I'm not sure I can comment on kind of those aspects of the mission right now, but what I will say is, again, on the research and development aspect, making sure that we're fully engaged and as open as possible. So, you know, you can look at places like IARPA and like a lot of the work that happens at agencies like NSA Research, where they're very public efforts to engage with the broader research community. So, you know, NSA just released a press release about some of the work that they're doing in quantum and some of the new initiatives that they're standing up there. So, again, kind of really using this pandemic as an opportunity to assess how we interact with the R&D enterprise and the broader science and technology enterprise is really what we're focused on right now.
Because I'm thinking, say, if there are facial recognition algorithms and machinery to do that, can those be modified? And can we do the research to find out whether, well, if all you can see is the bridge of the nose and the eyes, can a face be recognized in that manner? That type of question, is that what might be coming up at places like that?
Yeah, so again, a lot of what we focus on is there's external technologies that are developed for a particular industrial or commercial use that are about 80% of the way of what we need for our particular mission problems. So what we are really focused on is how do we tap into a lot of those things that are happening out in the open and adapt them or modify them to what we need to do our mission, as well as if we're building something completely on our own, how do we ensure that we're using the most state-of-the-art techniques and the most state-of-the-art technologies, even if we're building something on our own. So those are the two kind of big buckets that I see, is just ensuring that we're tapped into these broader conversations.
And just in the daily operations of your office, the science and technology office, are you totally remote, and has that had any effect on people's ability to collaborate and exchange, you know, the latest with one another?
We are not completely remote, but we've done everything that we can to ensure the safety of our workforce and make sure that we're able to do the mission work that we have here. So a lot of that can be done outside of our secure spaces, but obviously there are some things that have to happen here. So we're really focused on how do we strike that balance and ensure the safety and health of our workforce. But again, a lot of these conversations have been pushed kind of out beyond our normal area of comfort. And I see that as a net benefit. For one particular example, we host a research symposium every year called ICARS, the IC Academic Research Symposium. And that's usually hosted in person, but this year we pivoted that to a fully digital approach. So that was something very novel for us, and something that it isn't necessarily the most comfortable thing for the intelligence community to do, but we had a lot of goodness that came from that. So I'm very excited to see which one of these things stick around post-pandemic, and I think there will definitely be an evolution in the way we think about how we accomplish our mission.
Yeah, because some organizations that used to have live events or in-person events would get 200, 300, 400, and virtual they got 5,000. So there is some goodness, I guess, as you say, that can come out of that.
Yeah, definitely. And our in our particular set of applications, we often have to bring people to the Washington metropolitan area. So being able to engage with in conversations with folks outside of the kind of East Coast corridor, because it's sometimes harder for people, you know, in California or the West Coast to travel here to D.C. to engage in some of these conversations. So using these virtual engagements as an opportunity to chat with some of these folks that we might not normally have in some of these rooms has been very, very beneficial in kind of broadening the scope of the communities that we talk to. So to your point, you know, we don't have 5,000 people at some of these events, but we've gone from relatively small rooms to hundreds of people. So that's been very good for us, I think.
And I want to talk about the data strategy for the IC. What's your role in establishing or modifying a data strategy, and how has it changed with respect to the greater adoption of Internet of Things technologies and more and varied types of data in the work that the intelligence community does across the board?
Yeah, so on the data strategy points, the main point here at ODNI for that is our chief data officer, and they do great work in ensuring that this data is collected and stored and sorted properly so that people can make use of it, as well as with our chief information officer to make sure that the technologies exist to do all those things. So from my seat here in science and technology, and especially with some of the stuff we're doing with AIM, as previously discussed, and the machine learning work, is to ensure that we're putting in the requirements so that that data is usable for our purposes. And what I mean by that is for machine learning, people talk about how much data it needs, but machine learning approaches don't just need data. It needs data that is tagged for a purpose, that is able to be used to train an algorithm that's cleaned and doesn't have some weird anomalies in it or something like that that'll throw off a trained model. So that's really what we're focused on here in terms of the data strategy, is how do we ensure that those things are put in place, that the data is usable for some of these new applications that that we're considering, and not just from the traditional kind of data usage and data as an asset in terms of the data strategy. So that's what we're focused on here in science and technology, is making sure that it's usable for our purposes.
Because I think even the CIOs and the chief data officers would say that it's very important that this is a team effort so that people are sensitized to what data can do for them. And maybe the work of the CDO can enable people to think differently about data. And then in turn, it kind of feeds what the CDO does to make sure that what people come up with as ideas is supportable by the way they stage and, as you say, tag and otherwise handle the data, correct? Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, exactly. And again, from a technology standpoint, being able to inform people like the CDO of here's what we would really need, and here's what current state of the art requires to be able to do some of these things that we're contemplating, as well as, you know, for us being fed back from the CDO, you know, here's some of the things that they're contemplating, and here's some of the investments that they're going to make, and does that track with the things that we need? So very much agree, it is a very collaborative effort, and we have great relationships there, and we're all have our eyes focused on the same common goal, which is making sure that this data and this information is usable and is relevant to the mission of the IC writ large. So we have great partnerships there, and I'm very excited by some of the work that's ongoing, and I think we're in a very good place, especially for my particular interest in the kind of AIM world and the machine learning world.
John Beeler is Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer for men, but African American men are more at risk. That's primarily because it's often diagnosed when it's more advanced. The good news is that diagnosed early, most prostate cancer can be treated effectively. If you're a man over 50 or have a family history of prostate cancer, talk to your doctor today about a test. For more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our discussion with John Beeler, the Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, on the topic of digital transformation. And let's talk about the INSTEP program that's featured prominently when anyone does a search on science and technology in the ODNI, as I did before speaking with you. What is INSTEP and what are its goals?
Yeah, so for the INSTEP program, historically what we've done is as we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, my job is to make sure that we're investing in science and technology capabilities to enable the IC's mission. So to do that, we take a look at the requirements of the mission folks, and we translate that into science and technology needs, and then we try to publish those needs to a broader community. So both at the classified level to kind of the cleared performer base there, as well as unclassified. So the goal of this is to let folks that are interested in working with the government know what we're concerned with and know what we're thinking about and know what we think is interesting, so that folks can either engage with us, if they have a capability that they think can close a gap that we have, or inform some of their own internal investments, right? So if you know that the government is interested in something like low-shot learning and machine learning, and if you're a company, you might adapt some of your research and development efforts to fit that need, even if you don't have a capability that might meet it right now today. So the InStep program kind of articulates this broader movement to understand what we need in terms of science and technology capabilities as an IC, communicate those out to partners, and then meet with partners. So I think one of the things that you probably saw is we release an RFI, a request for information, tied to these needs so that we can engage in these one-on-one meetings with companies where we bring in companies, both startups, traditional defense contractors, non-traditional partners, you name it, we invite them to these one-on-one meetings so that they can talk to both us here at ODNI as well as broader community partners. So if a company thinks they have some novel capability that can close a gap, we want to make sure that gets in front of the relevant partners that have that need.
Yeah, earlier you mentioned that there are some technologies from maybe the large vendors or the well-known vendors, the established federal contractors, that are not quite to the level that you might need for specific intelligence applications. So, there's in the area of computer vision, for example, or artificial or some of the biosciences. Would it be possible that the development of that final 20% of capability might not be economic for some of the large companies, but perhaps you could convene a partnership of some small cutting-edge company that could, for them, it would be worth investing in that last 20% of capability. They could partner with one another, and the IC would get the capabilities that it needs. Is that a reasonable scenario?
Yeah, we think of all sorts of novel ways to get the capabilities that we need. So to your point, we're pretty laser focused on the unique IC needs in this space, because a lot of times we might have overlap with places like the Department of Defense or things like that. They have the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center where they also invest in machine learning capabilities. So for us, we're very focused on what is it that we need that is unique to the IC, and then how do we best accomplish those close those capability gaps. So whether that's partnering with a kind of large traditional defense contractor, whether that's partnering with non-traditional folks like the startup community, via things like investments with InQtel, which invests in the startup community on behalf of the intelligence community, we're open to any and all. We're very agnostic to a particular vehicle or mechanism. Again, our goal is to make sure that we're closing these capability gaps so that we're able to prosecute against mission. So what you mentioned is a very plausible way to do that, but we're open to any and all approaches to getting after our goals.
John Beeler is Director of Science and Technology for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. To hear this interview in its entirety or to share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for January, Digital Transformation Month, sponsored by NEC Corporation on Federal News Network.